Glad you appreciate you joining me again this afternoon, and again, these weekly calls are an effort to sort of keep you updated a bit more, give you more information. We are trying to field as many questions as possible, and it, you know, just very difficult for us to get back to every one of you with every question, so we're just trying to manage this in as efficient and timely a process as possible. Since last week, markets have calmed down a bit in terms of the lower end of the credit spectrum. There hasn't been a lot of volume and a lot of things going on. Things have slowed down a bit. We are coming into the Labor Day weekend, so I think that most of those of you who are involved in the bond trading world knows that that does bring about a bit of slowing in the marketplace. Since last week, though, we have had the remit reports released on the ABX indices, the underlying collateral in the ABX, and that was a bit nothing changed there, but nothing changed means that there was really no improvement either. So we did see the ABX indices slip a bit the last 2 days, going into the end of last week, and again early this week the ABX index was weaker. Today the ABX indices are essentially flat. Not much has changed with what's going on in the mortgage arena. I think that with regard to the lower end of the capital structure, we're beginning to see some settling out in pricing. Some bonds are beginning to move. You know, we talked about how badly bonds have been marked down and how much price erosion has occurred in the lower tranches of both mortgage-related securities and CLOs and CDOs. That I see stabilizing a bit. It's just simply marked down to the level that where there's intrinsic value, and there are cash buyers that are making, you know, making that market stabilize a bit. I think that where I see continued nervousness on the dealer front, especially on the dealer front, is in the very high end of the credit structure of mortgage-related securities, especially in the Alt-A collateral type. There are a lot of things that make a bond Alt-A. Alt-A meaning, just a little description here, A would be an A credit, subprime or B and C credits, and usually with a 675 or lower FICO would be subprime well into the 500s. Anything with a 700 FICO or higher would be considered an A credit. An Alt-A simply means that there's some element of that loan that doesn't meet a full conforming a loan, like a Fannie or Freddie loan. It's either perhaps a jumbo, it's large, it could have limited documentation, it could have stated income, it could have a lower than normal down payment, what have you. There's some feature of that loan that makes it an alternative to just an outright A or prime loan. Generally, they have performed well, and Countrywide is a big originator of Alt-A collateral, along with WaMu and Long Beach and the like. But Alt-A collateral continues to be a little bit on the nervous side because of the size, especially in the AA and AAA segment of that marketplace. Again, to get back to my comment, where I find dealer concern now is at the very high end of the credit structure because of the volume that is that has to be digested and change hands and could sort of, you know, present balance sheet difficulty. The for instance, in a CMO or a CDO, 80 to 85% of the structure is rated AAA. Depending on the collateral that's involved, you're going to get a very high percentage of that structure is going to be in anything from 1.5 to 10-year AAA tranches. And that is where so much of the asset-backed commercial paper world and the funding vehicles that have been set up for those type of securities and get leverage then by issuing 30-day rolling commercial paper is residing. Very large chunks of AAA LIBOR-based floaters are in those asset-backed commercial paper conduits. And again, just in listening to some conference calls with primary dealers, I think that's their big concern is the volume of AAA paper that could come back to the marketplace. So although I see some firming in the lower tranches, the deeper discounted credit securities, I think that Wall Street in general and the credit markets continue to be quite tedious, if you will, with regard to their willingness to make markets and willingness to trade, knowing that there is still some size that probably has to change hands. I don't see much change with regard to credit characteristics. I don't see a lot of change with regard to the cash flows we're receiving and that sort of thing. So, again, somewhat of a calm week. We'll begin to perhaps get some footing in here. Yesterday was a bit volatile with all of the remits coming out on the ABX indices. And short of those delinquencies and, 30, 60, 90-day delinquencies, short of those showing some several months of trending in the opposite direction, those delinquencies coming going lower, I don't expect the ABX index to be of much help in terms of pricing. We're talking about 80 CUSIPs that are involved, 20 CUSIPs per series, 20 CUSIPs in the 061, 20 in the 062, 20 in the 071, and 20 in the 072, and those become the proxy for the ABX world. And consequently, no matter what you own, no matter how far off of that index, you're going to be affected a bit by what's going on with those 80 CUSIPs. And so, although we feel like we've got some situations that are certainly not directly tied to that, again, it does have a bearing on what's going on. We do have several questions, and I certainly appreciate those of you who continue to send in the questions in this way. And I can't get to all of them, can't answer all of them, but there are certainly some common questions that continue to crop up that I'll try to get to every week. So be patient with me a bit, if you will, and I will try to get to it. Courtney has been very helpful in getting those questions that show up most often in front of me. This week, I would really want to focus on some questions regarding the intermediate fund, such as the net asset value volatility there and what to look for going forward there. Intermediate fund has been affected by the same market conditions that are affecting the high income fund. It's just that we're using higher rated securities or using the next tranche or two higher in the intermediate fund. So, although our allocations are a bit different, we do have a little higher allocation to corporate bonds in the intermediate fund. The spread widening or the gap between treasuries and credit-oriented securities that began to open up, in March and then certainly has opened up since the end of June in a tremendous way has affected the intermediate fund as well as the high-income fund to a lesser extent, but nevertheless the same way. Let me give you an example. We do own quite a bit of long-dated, highly-rated financial corporate bonds, such as Barclays and Halifax Bank of Scotland and J.P. Morgan and the like. Even in those cases of bonds that are rated A1, A+, or AA, since June, the spread over treasuries has widened by double or more. In the case of a credit like Bell South, the 30-year Bell South credit widened by more than double its spread at the end of June. So a lot of pressure, no matter what the credit exposure is, has affected the net asset value of the intermediate fund. Now, the other thing I might add is the intermediate fund performed extremely well in the last half of 2006. In fact, was noted for its performance by several observers, but part of that was increasing the duration or lengthening the duration of the intermediate fund. Well, had I known that the first quarter GDP would come in at under 1%, I certainly would have thought I had it dead on right. But we saw interest rates turn and go back significantly higher in the first and second quarter, really peaking in June at about 5.3% on the 10-year, up dramatically. So the intermediate fund sort of suffered in the same way, sort of the effects of a perfect storm. You had rising interest rates going up quite a bit in the 5 to 10-year part of the curve, as well as credit spreads widening as well. Certainly, any of the CDOs that were represented in the intermediate fund took significant write-downs as well, although they may be rated single A or double A. The proportion or the amount of write-down there was also difficult to have imagined ahead of time. So our objective, again, in the intermediate fund has been one of providing an investment-grade portfolio in the intermediate part of the curve. 5 to 10 year part of the curve that has been very competitive from an income production standpoint. It has done that. It continues to do that, but with the credit spreads widening as much as they have on all of the underlying assets, it has been it has suffered on the NAV as well. You've seen the NAV there stabilize a bit. I think that that is probably in line with what we're seeing in the credit markets in general. The performing assets continue to be, I don't even know right off the top of my head if we have a non-performing asset in the intermediate fund. Again, we're using higher in the capital structure. Most bonds have performed as we have expected, but the pricing on those bonds has been under a lot of pressure. So with regard to liquidity, that portfolio obviously has undergone some redemptions as well as the high income fund. We've been able to meet that liquidity with regard to selling of assets. Things are more liquid now than they were 2 weeks ago. Really, Thursday, a week and a half ago, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday were the most illiquid of times in the credit market, and things have improved a bit since then. Again, affected much the same way with the credit spread widening, but the dividend continues to be, sort of in the same realm that it has been. And, we use a 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, and 12 month tracking of our income, and it looks to be essentially unchanged. So that, of course, I don't think is anything to be expected there other than what we've been seeing. With regard to current trading activity, a number of questions asked is how are we trading to take advantage of this situation? What are we doing in terms of changing or repositioning the portfolios? First of all, and most significantly, we have had to deal with a number of redemptions in both HIX and IBX. Further, we've also had to reduce the leverage in the closed-end funds due to the lower net asset value in those funds. So our first objective has been to meet liquidity requirements, and having accomplished that, we're now, repositioning or able to trade the portfolio to take some positions into gradually different directions. Again, having to place a much higher priority on liquidity than we would have had in the past, simply because that's the market conditions are such that bonds are just much more illiquid than they have been in the past, and we have to keep that in mind. This is a credit market that is going to take some time to settle out and to stabilize, and certainly quite a while to correct. So it's not necessary to trade feverishly today, but to allow the markets to find some sort of equilibrium, and then to carefully consider some of the sectors and items that will be the first beneficiaries or be the most significant beneficiaries of a recovery in the credit markets. And this will take a while. I don't mean to say that don't expect this to turn around next month. And it's not necessary that we make a lot of changes this week or next week to participate. Most of you are certainly familiar with market cycles, and being involved in equities, know that these things take some time to begin to correct and to find the equilibrium and to find the demand to come back into the assets to drive them in the right direction. We can afford to be patient here and plan to do so. There are plenty of opportunities in pretty much all the credit sectors. One of the questions was regarding where do we find the most opportunities. It's plentiful. You just name a credit sector, it's there. There's plenty available. Now, the question becomes, which ones offer the best opportunities? Well, some of the most deeply discounted assets are certainly in the structured finance area, but they might not be the first or most significant beneficiaries of a recovery. So we want to compare that to what might be available in corporate as well. Some of the corporate bonds that we've traded in the investment-grade arena that were part of the intermediate fund widened out to over 9% yield. So it just is some dramatic changing in pricing, no matter what the credit item is involved. So some patience and a little time, and we'll find some opportunities that will work for us. Another question, we continue to get a number of questions regarding the leverage in the closed-end funds. Again, that number, we've had to pare that number back a bit. It seems to have found a level that works for us now. We've gotten that taken care of. So that we are running still probably in the mid-20s in terms of leverage, but that's on a much lower NAV, so the actual dollars involved are lower but the leverage amount is similar, although somewhat lower than it has been. And very simply, the effect of leverage is to merely amplify the underlying results. Leverage doesn't really change anything that's going on in the portfolio fundamentally. Whatever is happening with the underlying portfolio will be amplified by the application of leverage. So if you're talking about NAV volatility, net asset value is moving up, then the leverage will give that some increase, or you'll have some percentage move higher that's amplified by the leverage, or if it's down. And so you have the same thing going on. And income production is the same story. If your income production is good and is on an upward trend, then the leverage will amplify that effect. Conversely, it will do the same thing if income is on the way down, because you are paying for that leverage one way or the other. So if you can earn more than it's costing you on the leverage, and that number can move higher, then you know the leverage can help the income production. Fundamentally, there's no different than applying a margin balance to an individual account with stocks. So if the account is performing well, then the leverage will amplify that performance. If it's performing poorly, the leverage amplifies that as well. With improved market conditions, we could probably and would, you know, add back some of the leverage whenever that opportunity presents itself. So we feel good about using the leverage. Excuse me, we feel good about using the leverage. It just we've just had a difficult market to do that, and we would hope to add that back at some point. Finally, with regard to the workouts of how we approach workouts of securities that have not performed well, again, the market is generally right now is over discounting. We feel like bonds that are experiencing some credit difficulties, and the levels are well lower than perhaps their fundamental value. In a lot of structured finance cases, you may go through a period of time where you have deferred cash flows that will reinstate at some point in the future. So you may need to be patient with those assets to see if that will occur. I am currently own a manufactured housing bond that probably went through 2 years of deferred payments, but is now making up those payments in a mezzanine piece of a MH bond from 1996. So some patience is required and some assessment of what the marketplace will look like going forward. So it's not always the same 1, 2, 3 steps. I know that David has gone through several bankruptcy reorgs on the corporate side. Not all of them work the same way, but frequently patience will reward the person who will take the time to look at what assets are involved and work those out. Finally, with regard to just the general perception in the marketplace of what's going on with interest rates, there's been a lot of conversation about the Fed cutting rates at the September meeting, or even an inter-meeting cut of rates. We feel like that, and I did do conference calls in the past where I thought the Fed would begin lowering rates in 2007. I would have felt sure of that last year, even into the first part of this year when we saw the first quarter GDP number. I would have felt even more sure of that. However, they've been very reluctant to do so. With deteriorating credit conditions, we've seen the Fed have to lower the rate at the discount window and encourage borrowings there to reliquify the marketplace. I think the Fed is going to be reluctant to lower rates. I think they see that as maybe bailing out over-leveraged situations, and will probably try to stimulate liquidity through the discount window and other means than lowering rates. However, I happen to be of the opinion that eventually lower rates are necessary to bring about some more stability in the credit market. So I still kind of hold to that. I don't know that it's going to happen in September, but I still would, if you ask me to place my odds on lower Fed funds by during the year of 2007, I got to tell you, I feel like that's going to happen. And I feel like that we'll have a slower fourth quarter than is expected. So the turmoil in credit markets is going to eventually sort of flow through to the consumer with the availability of credit, whether that be via the automobile loan or credit card or mortgage loan or home equity line of credit. I think that will have an effect on slowing the economy. So with that, we are looking for somewhat lower rates or at least stable rates have enjoyed some stability in the credit markets. I think that they're probably still somewhat oversold and looking for opportunities there. And that will conclude our update for this week. Continue to send us your questions. I'll try to get to them as quickly as I can and try to group them into similar questions so that I can answer them in a timely and orderly fashion. And thank you for continuing to appreciate your encouragement and staying with the funds. We continue to look forward to delivering good returns and going forward. Thank you very much.